From NPR, it's Latino USA. This week, we take you on a journey into an untold story in the Dominican Republic. A year after the devastating earthquake in Haiti, another humanitarian crisis.
They've threatened us. They'll go into our houses with machetes to do a massacre. That's why we're afraid.
Feeling the immigration backlash, not in the U.S., but in the Dominican Republic, as Haitians seek refuge in that country.
We Dominicans, our culture is European and indigenous. Meanwhile, the Haitian culture is totally African. They believe in voodoo, which is why we mistrust them.
Join us on the ground as we explore nativism, fear, and hope in the Dominican Republic. That's coming up on a special edition of Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us. Could a down economy actually mean fewer babies being born? Well, it's a strong possibility, at least according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Overall, the U.S. birth rate has dropped for the third straight year. And this is especially true in the Latino community. So what's actually happening and why? Vanessa Cárdenas from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. joins us now to help us understand. Thanks for joining us, Vanessa.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so what's going on here? I mean, is it that you have a downturn in the economy and then that relates to how in terms of birth rate?
What the data is showing us from the CDC report is that last year there was a huge drop for Latino birth rates. It was almost 6 percentage points compared to the drop for whites and black women. For whites, it was 2%, and for black women, it was 3%. So it's definitely huge. And the reason why we think there's an economic angle to that is because we know that communities of color, and particularly Latinos, have also been hit the most in terms of poverty rates and obviously the housing crisis, et cetera. And just overall, there's a strong correlation between birth rates and the economy. So when we look at our history, in the times when the country has been going through economic recessions, we've seen a drop in the birth rates. So this story sort of is consistent with that. And also another point in the data is the decline in birth rates. It actually started around the same time that the Great Recession started, which is 2007.
Put that together with the fact that everybody's talking about the census numbers of the last decade, which show that the Latino demographic grew by 43%. And most of that growth was not from immigrants, but in fact from Latinos born inside the United States. So you have demographic growth at 43%, and now these statistics that are saying that the birth rate is going down.
I think the question is what the future statistics will show, right? Because what's happening is that women are putting off having a baby, which makes sense. You know, when you don't have money, when you're planning, you know, you're trying to see whether you can afford to have more kids. And right now, not a lot of women, and especially women that are facing poverty and economic recession at worse levels, they're putting childbirth off. So, you know, it's a logical step. In my mind, I think, you know, we need to see what the next statistics show. The actual average age for Latinos is 27, so it's a very young population. Couples are maybe, you know, rethinking how big their families are. They might be just postponing having kids. But I think, you know, overall, we're still a very young population. Almost a quarter of our children nationwide are Latinos, so I don't think this decline will change the story of the Latino growth in the long term.
There was also some interesting news in terms of the statistics showing that the birth rate among Latina teenagers has also decreased. So this is good news, right?
That's great news because, you know, as we know, the Latina pregnancy for teens in our community is huge. I mean, it's the highest number. So to know that today this data shows that, in fact, we are at a record low for all groups, including Hispanics, it's really great news. And it shows that our education and prevention programs are working, that our women overall, you know, young Latinas and older Latinas, they're really sort of taking charge of their bodies and just really learning more about the importance of family planning and making decisions. I think those are great news for our community. in any economy, the most important asset is human capital. And that's why, you know, other countries that are losing population worry about whether or not their people are having kids. And that's why, you know, having a strong and young and vibrant population is important. And that's why the fact that the Latino community is growing and, you know, having kids, it's good for our country, actually. But again, I don't know that this the statistic now will sustain, and I think that's the larger question. Whether this story is going to continue next year or not, still, I think, depends very much in how well we do in terms of our economy in the future.
Vanessa, thanks so much for joining us on Latino USA.
Thank you so much.
Vanessa Cárdenas is the director of Progress 2050 at the Center for American Progress. For news updates throughout the week, you can check out our website at latinousa.org. You can also follow us on Twitter or become our friend on Facebook. We are Latino USA, all one word. We're back in 30 segundos, so stay with us. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Haiti and the Dominican Republic are two countries at once alike, sharing an island and an intertwined history, but they also couldn't be so entirely different, with cultural, linguistic, and economic differences. One woman who bridged that divide was Sonia Pierre. Sonia grew up in a Dominican migrant worker camp along with 11 other siblings. She was a born leader and an activist. At 13 years old, she led her fellow Dominican residents of Haitian descent in a march for sugarcane cutters' rights. She was arrested and threatened to be deported to Haiti, even though she was born in the Dominican Republic. After that, Sonia dedicated her life to fight for the rights of Haitian immigrants and their children living in the Dominican Republic. Her activism made her a target of many threats, but she never gave up. Her organization, the Movement for Dominican Women of Haitian Descent, has helped thousands. Sonia Pierre passed away unexpectedly this past week. She was just 48 years old. We spent some time with Sonia this past summer as part of a documentary looking at the abuses of Haitian immigrants living in the Dominican Republic. In memory of Sonia Pierre, we bring you a special rebroadcast of that program. It's a stunning Monday morning. The sky is a shocking Caribbean blue. But this beautiful backdrop doesn't mask something terrible taking place at the very same time. From a white bus with metal bars on the windows, I hear cries of distress.
Yo tengo un pasaporte. Hay una gente que la policía busca un cuarto en el banco.
Hay muchos que tienen pasaporte en vencida. Yo soy refugiado.
Ven, acércate. Tell me what happened to you this morning.
A group of anxious men speak over one another, struggling to be heard. They claim they've been picked up unlawfully by immigration authorities. We have papers, they say to me. And then they add, we've been separated from our families. As they speak to me, they stretch out their arms through the cramped metal bars. This could be Arizona or Texas, where deportation scenes are increasingly common. But today, this is happening in the Dominican Republic, and the people that are being deported are not from Mexico or Guatemala, they're from Haiti. It's been more than a year since the devastating earthquake struck Haiti on January 12th. Many Haitians left the country to help their families and find opportunities elsewhere. Some went to the United States, but many more went right next door to the Dominican Republic.
I've been in Dominican Republic for a year now because of the earthquake. My experience was really traumatizing and really hard for me and for my mom. I had to leave behind my oldest sister and a lot of friends.
Sequit Lincolnson fled Haiti shortly after the earthquake.
I didn't get a chance to bring my things here from Haiti, like my documents and my papers. So right now I'm an undocumented Haitian.
Haiti and the Dominican Republic have had separate identities since colonial times, but sharing the island has led to years of conflict. Dominicans haven't forgotten that Haitians once occupied their country for decades in the 1800s. And Haitians remember the 1937 massacre, when 30,000 Haitians were killed on the border during the military dictatorship of Rafael Trujillo. Over the past decades, relations have been better. In fact, the Dominican Republic was among the first to provide aid to Haiti after the earthquake. Sigfrido Pared Pérez is the director of immigration for the Dominican Republic.
On January 14th, only 2 days after the earthquake, we gave a special permit to all illegal Haitians living in the Dominican Republic so they could go home, check on their families, and return. No other country in the world did that.
But recently, the Dominican Republic has cracked down on Haitian immigrants. Redadas, or immigration raids, have become more common. But it's more than just threats of deportation that Haitians are worried about. I spoke with Pastor Gautier Wilson about what Haitians are hearing in their neighborhood streets.
They've threatened us. They'll go into our houses with machetes to do a massacre, just like the old government of Trujillo. That's why we're afraid.
They want to literally cut you, slice you, take away your life?
Yes, that's what they're saying. They want to see Haitians out of the community. The situation for Haitians here is very, very difficult.
Recently, the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights criticized the Dominican government on the recent deportations and profiling of Haitian immigrants. Head of Immigration, Pared Pérez, defends his country's policies.
At the moment, the Dominican Republic has about 1.2 million illegal Haitian immigrants, and we have about 10 million inhabitants. We're the only country in the world with an illegal immigrant population that amounts to 10% of its total population. That definitely helps the current Haitian situation, but it also affects the development of the Dominican Republic.
In recent years, though, the Dominican Republic has had a stable democratic government and a growing economy. This has created a major push for Haitians to migrate to their better-off neighbor right next door.
I'd say the first problem has to do with the need for legalizing those who are already here with no documentation.
Davide Sala is a human rights advocate who works with CEFASA, an NGO that's run by Catholic Charities. Sala says that here, the undocumented are really just that. They not only have no legal papers to be in the Dominican Republic, they often have never even been issued birth certificates or other documents in their native Haiti.
Overall, this is a problem of political will from both the Dominican Republic and Haiti, to have a country where everyone's immigration status is documented.
What the Dominican government has done is to take a hard-line approach. On January 26th of this year, the country changed its constitution and created a birthright amendment. It not only denies citizenship to any child born to Haitian parents in the Dominican Republic, but it also strips Dominican citizenship away from Haitians living in the country. Again, former immigration official Sigfrido Pared Pérez.
No country in the world would grant citizenship to a child who doesn't have proper documentation, even if you're there legally. It's the same in the Dominican Republic.
Pared Pérez might sound tough on immigration, but shortly after our interview, he was let go by Dominican President Leonel Fernandez, reportedly for not taking a stronger stand on the issue of immigration.
My name is Sonia Pierre, or Solange Pierre, which is what my mom would have liked me to be called.
Sonia Pierre is the daughter of Haitians who worked in the sugarcane fields. She was born and grew up in the Dominican Republic. She experienced firsthand the hostility that many dark-skinned Haitians go through in the Dominican society that tends to value lighter skin.
I didn't feel any different in the Batey I grew up in until I went to school. It was there that I knew rejection, not only from children but from teachers as well. They would sit us apart from the rest and call us little Haitians. But people aren't born with prejudices. They learn them. Because in the Batey we had Haitians, Dominicans and children of Haitian heritage, and we all got along. But it was not the same at school. There I knew rejection, racism, and much more. I didn't know how to deal with it.
Sonia Pierre went on to become a leading international human rights advocate and the director of MUDA, the Movement for Dominican Women of Haitian Descent. Over the past year, she says she's witnessed a change in her country.
Yo diría que la situación...
The situation has not gotten any better. On the contrary, in terms of discrimination and xenophobic acts, it's gotten worse. Whenever there is a crisis in this country, the Haitian topic comes up.
Dominican government officials say they simply cannot take so many Haitian refugees, immigrants, that they cannot sustain that permanently in this country. Don't they have a case with that?
Es una doble moral, porque cada año se va a la frontera.
There's a double standard because each year they go to the border to look for temporary farm workers. If they need 3,000 workers in the sugar cane fields, they go to the border to get them, especially in areas like agriculture. Haitian immigrants do that work because nobody wants to work the fields.
Y este trabajo lo hacen los inmigrantes haitianos.
Many Dominicans complain that Haitians are taking their jobs away and are contributing to an increase in crime and disease in their country.
We are arriving into Santiago, which is the second biggest city in the Dominican Republic, and it's here where we're going to meet the community leader. This is a provincial town. It's actually called the City of the Heart, La Ciudad del Corazón. But at this point, there's a tremendous amount of tension in Santiago.
Pedro Paulino is the board president of Zona Sur, a neighborhood association in the southern area of Santiago. He's an outspoken critic of Haitian immigrants in his country.
We're being invaded, and we're running a real risk of being contaminated because we don't know what kind of people they are. We have the problem of cholera on the border and other diseases they brought from Haiti. That affects us, so we ask the authorities to do something about it and to effectively combat this immigration.
Paulino explains to me how his group keeps watch over their neighborhoods. They're highly organized, gathering intelligence about undocumented Haitians living in their communities, and they then hand this information over to the authorities. It's like they're Dominican Minutemen.
Not so long ago, there was a Haitian who was going around threatening people in the neighborhood. So we alerted the authorities, he was arrested and then deported. And that's what we're doing here, just forcing the authorities to act.
Human rights activist Sonia Pierre believes neighborhood associations like Zona Sur are contributing to, rather than helping relieve the tensions between Dominicans and Haitians.
The ones who are calling themselves nationalists are those who see nationalism as something based on hatred. For me, Dominicanness is something broad and wholesome that calls for opening yourself to the world.
We have to take a short break here, but stay with us as we continue our documentary about Haitian immigrants in the Dominican Republic. We're back in a minute. Quédense con nosotros. Stay tuned.
Thank you.
You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. We continue now with our special rebroadcast of our documentary about Haitian immigrants living in the Dominican Republic. We do so in memory of Haitian Dominican activist Sonia Pierre, who passed away unexpectedly this week at the age of 48. Back now to Santiago in the Dominican Republic. We leave the neighborhood Zona Sur in Santiago and make our way to the Barrio San José Las Minas. And here, a similar neighborhood association is also taking matters into its own hands in a very public way. We're standing in front of a basketball court, a community basketball court, and hanging on the fence here is a sign in Creole. And now we're with our translator, who's going to tell us what the sign says, what the sign means.
Nous parlons haïtien illégal dans communauté ça. Ça yo qui là yo, nous t'avlons sortir volontairement. We do not want illegal Haitians in this community. The ones that are illegal, we would like them to voluntarily leave the community.
As we're looking at the sign, Orlando Enriquez rides by on his bicycle. He's Dominican and lives in this neighborhood.
¿Te puedo hacer una pregunta? ¿Qué te parece?
Can you tell me what you think about these signs?
Bueno, como te digo, para uno a veces es penoso de que uno vea.
It's sad sometimes to constantly see this situation. It reflects on us as much as on them. Just because one Haitian makes a bad decision doesn't mean we all have to pay for it. The same thing goes when we go to the United States and there's one of us who's bad. Then they say that all Dominicans are bad, but we're not all bad.
In fact, many Dominicans themselves have left the country. An estimated 1.8 million of them live in the U.S., and many of them are undocumented.
Most of the Dominican people befriend Haitians.
U.S. Ambassador to the Dominican Republic, Raul Izaguirre, has watched the turmoil between Dominicans and Haitians play out with cautious reservation. A longtime civil rights activist in the United States, he's now in the position of having to respond to the situation as an American diplomat.
In the border, just like we have border problems in Arizona, we have border problems with Haiti and the Dominican Republic, and there are vigilante groups here as they are in the United States, and we condemn them here and we condemn them in the United States. And so I think it would be wrong to try to blame the entire Dominican people or the Dominican government for the actions of a few renegades.
While we were in the Dominican Republic, the ambassador made headlines for remarks he made denouncing reports of violence against Haitian immigrants.
How can the American government be critical of the Dominican government in relation to how it treats its undocumented Haitians when the American government has a long list of criticisms in terms of how it treats its own undocumented immigrants?
Look, the United States of America doesn't always do the right thing, but it tries to do the right thing. I mean, it stands for principles that are universal. It doesn't mean that we live up to all of our principles, but we try. And what makes the United States the great country that it is that it always keeps trying to better its position and its policies.
The Dominican Republic is a multiracial nation with African, Spanish, and indigenous roots. Though you can see traces of Africa in every aspect of Dominican life, race remains a sensitive issue on the island, and blackness is often denied.
We are all racially mixed here. We are all black, white, blue, yellow, green, and what have you.
Again, former immigration official Sigfrido Pared Perez.
You can go take a look in cities like Santo Domingo or Santiago, and you will see whites and blacks working together, hanging out together, marrying and divorcing each other. In the Dominican Republic, we do not care about race.
José Alberto Peña of the Zona Sur Neighborhood Association shares a perspective that, in all likelihood, reflects the more brutal reality of the street.
We Dominicans, our culture is European and indigenous. Meanwhile, the Haitian culture is totally African. They believe in voodoo. So you see that they're poorly educated, which is why we mistrust them.
¿Qué?
cheerful pink and blue color cabanas pepper the grounds of CEFASA, the NGO run by the Catholic Charities. It's here that everyday Haitians and even some Dominicans meet to organize, to find common ground, and to rise above inflammatory rhetoric.
Even if a person doesn't have any documentation, the person is never illegal. Illegal means against the law. And there is no law that says that a person doesn't have the right to exist. The person exists. It's their migratory status that is irregular.
Here at CEFASA, Davide Sala oversees a program that assists Haitian immigrants living in the Dominican Republic. He believes that immigration policy needs to take a new and different approach.
In this day and age, the issue can't be about splitting the island with an uncrossable line. Both Haiti and the Dominican Republic have troubles and need to develop without stepping on each other's foot. But we have to begin to think about both countries as countries that share an island and a history, and thus have to find a common ground.
The effort to find common ground is a work in progress. There may not be any solution, but at least the dialogue continues. And Sonia Pierre reminded us that that dialogue is not taking place just in high diplomatic circles, but in everyday encounters between Dominicans and Haitians.
Aquí en esta oficina que estaba abierta una...
I will never forget when a woman from Los Alcarizos arrived to our office. She came here, asked for me, and told me, "Sonia, I want you to give this little box to a Haitian mother." When I opened that box, I saw a bit of everything. 5 pounds of rice, 2 pounds of beans, 3 plantains, 2 sardines, diapers, milk, sanitary napkins, even underwear. She said people often forget that in times like these, women need underwear. I asked her what her name was, and she said, "Just say it is from a Dominican mother to a Haitian one." I looked at her, and I knew she'd have no means of going back home, so I offered money for her trip back. And she said, "No, Sonia, whatever you're going to give me, give it to a Haitian mother. I can walk home." I never saw her again. For me, that was the greatest.
And for this week, that's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Our documentary was produced by Xochitl Dorsey and edited by Maria Martin. We also had help this week from Mincho Jacob, Tina Rubio, NPR New York, and Manoli Wetherill. Join me again next week for another edition of NPR's Latino USA.
Funding for Latino USA is provided in part by the Marguerite Casey Foundation, supporting families leading change.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Lumber Liquidators, supporting the Ronald McDonald House Charities, the National Braille Press, and NPR. Information at lumberliquidators.com. And the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting solutions to prevent and end homelessness, on the web at melvilletrust.org. And the Pew Charitable Trusts, working to strengthen the arts and cultural sector through the Cultural Data Project at pewtrust.org. This is NPR.